Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. The time is 8:02. In attendance are, for the Senate, myself, Senator Stevens, chairing, Vice Chair Dunleavy, Senate President Huggins, Senator Gardner, and expecting Senator Stedman at any time. So the Senate Education Committee has a quorum, ready to conduct business. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you. And the House representatives present are Representative Seaton, Representative Reinbold, myself, Chair Gaddis, and Representative Ledoux. I apologize. And we also have a quorum, so, Senator, you may go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Well, today we're going to hear from Dr. Diane Hirschberg from the Center for Alaska Educational Policy Research. And please, you can be with us. And Dr. Terry Ackey from the Regional Education Laboratory, Center for Research, Evaluation, and Assessment. Thank you, ladies, for being here. We'll also hear later from Esther Cox, who now is the Vice Chair of the Alaska State Board of Education and Early Development, and she'll be presenting the board's annual report according to the rules of AS 1407-168. So Dr. Hirschberger, Dr. Ackey, pleased to have you here, and if you could begin your presentation.
Thank you very much. My name is Diane Hirschberg, and I am the director for the UAA Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, also a faculty member at UAA. And I want to thank you for this opportunity. This is, I believe, the third time that we have jointly presented to the committees here, just to keep you up to date on what we're doing. And so we very much appreciate this opportunity. I hope that you've had a chance not to read, but just to see that there's some materials that were distributed. And part of what I'm going to do is just kind of let you know what we're doing, and then hope that in our discussion you can pose to me some questions and issues that you think we should be looking at. I am going to preface this with last year there were some projects that we talked about, some of which are stalled out. We had received a very generous appropriation from the legislature a year and a half ago. Last year we did not receive what was potentially going to be a second appropriation. And unfortunately, right now, CAPER is completely soft money funded. Some of you are familiar with the Institute of Social and Economic Research at UAA. CAPER sits within ICER. And unlike most of UAA, we are mostly soft money funded, which means faculty have to bring in their own funding to cover projects. It also means that if we aren't certain of long-term funding, we can't hire people. We had some wonderful young researchers who were working with us who, unfortunately, when we weren't sure about our funding this year, we did have to let them go. And so we're a little dialed back on a couple of the projects, but what we're doing is managing to pull together enough resources to finish up a few projects, which we're going to talk about here, and also working on you know, trying to get some new funding, some either private or federal research funding to continue with some of the other work. So that said, there's we have a couple of publications that have come out recently where we have supported other faculty across the UA system to do work. One of them by Dr. Martin Laster at UAS was an overview of views from a group of superintendents on what quality teacher evaluation would look like in Alaska. And what's important about this is, of course, the department is in the middle of creating a new teacher evaluation system, and Dr. Laster has been working with the commissioner and others in talking about quality teacher evaluation with principals and superintendents around the state, so we're real excited about that work. There's work that I think you're very familiar with ICER doing, which is looking at teacher supply and demand and turnover, and you've got a four-page brief. We are in the, when we can find those 2 days to sit down and finish the writing, trying to put out a comprehensive report, which we try to do every few years. But what we did provide you with is an update, because, of course, this information is so important for understanding what's happening, especially in our rural schools where teacher turnover continues to be a problem. And we also did an update which the Board of Regents is hopefully going to accept as a final report this week. Every other year, the board brings to you the Alaska's University for Alaska Schools. We did a very short update for them this year, kind of an interim report, just to help them stay on top of what's happening with our graduates. And a related study, which actually was part of last year's Alaska's University of Alaska Schools report, looking at why some of our graduates from the UA system aren't in the schools immediately after finishing their program. So you either have copies of these, hard copies, or links for where these are sitting up on CAPR's website. Everything is available electronically. We have provided you with a couple of draft documents, and I'm going to emphasize draft in particular for the Rural and Indigenous Teacher Preparation Programs brief. We have just sent this out to both the deans of the education programs across the state and to all of the people who provided us information that is going to be included in this. And this is a brief looking at all of these different efforts we've had to increase the number of Indigenous and rural teachers, what's happened. People keep referring back to the EXCEED program, which was the single most successful program in graduating Alaska Native educators. It has been gone for a few years. There was the REP program, and now there's PETUS and several other initiatives you've heard about. Well, so what's happening? And this is a brief to give an overview and look at some of the lessons learned. And the lessons learned are not surprising to those of us in the field, but may not have been that obvious to people who are looking and saying, why can't we get more Indigenous educators into our rural schools? And the first is that there's the pool of candidates is limited. You all know, you've heard well, the issues around how many graduates we have from our schools and how many go on to post-secondary education. And then how many of those choose to become educators. A lot of programs have been based on finding Indigenous adults who already have a bachelor's degree and then giving them some kind of an alternative certification to get them into the classroom. It's a limited pool of people, and that really is one of the difficulties. The successful programs really have engaged the Indigenous communities in identifying people who are going to be teachers and in recruiting and really encouraging young people to see that as a career. Another issue is that many of these potential teacher candidates need supports of a more intensive nature than we might typically provide to our mainstream urban student, because a lot of them are first-generation college students, or they're adults who have come back and they're balancing family considerations and community considerations with going to school as a distance student. And a lot of programs have, where they've had success is being able to provide the kinds of support so that somebody doesn't have to figure out the mysteries of registration, finding textbooks, or that somebody gets support when they're struggling with passing the Praxis exam and how to identify their weak spots and work on increasing their fluency in those areas so that they can pass the Praxis exams. But that kind of support it's intensive and it's not inexpensive. And the final issue is the money. Just for running these programs, they've been dependent on external soft funds, especially federal funds, and we seem to reinvent the wheel every time we get another Alaska Native Education grant or another grant from another entity, rather than looking at how do we institutionalize this. Now that is, I would say, changing in the UA system. APU didn't go for any more grants. Their program has gotten very small, which is unfortunate because I think they did some very nice work. The UA system is saying, how do we make this part of our programs? But again, still struggling with that issue that our programs aren't funded to include some of the extra supports that these programs seem to indicate it make something successful. And then finally, we are also in the middle of a large statewide survey of teacher working conditions. And we started last spring, we launched in rural districts, but we launched late due to all those things you don't want to know about that delay research projects. And so our response rate in rural Alaska was not what we had hoped for. We have about 280 teachers who responded in rural Alaska. We launched this fall in the five big districts, and we got over 900 teacher responses. And we're back out in 10 select rural districts that are part of another project we're partnering with. This is up north. It's an NSF study of factors related to teachers staying in northern districts, and this is Uta Kaden and her team at UAF, so a partnership across the campuses. And we've already got well over 160 responses just from this second launching. So we're hoping that by the time we're done, we're going to have probably at least 1,500 responses from educators around the state. Now, many of you have probably heard the NEA Alaska survey results. We are collaborative in that we worked with NEA Alaska looking at what they were asking in their survey versus what we were asking. They were
I'm not sure we have heard those results yet. And so it's my understanding that we might hear them if we get to go to lunch at the Anchorage Chamber today, but I know my committee has not.
Okay.
We haven't gotten them yet.
Okay.
So.
All right.
So if you could speak to that, we're in the dark, at least some of us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. What I'd like to say is that rather than speaking to their results, we have complementary surveys. They were focusing a lot on what teachers are experiencing in the classroom and what are the challenges in terms of classroom practice, although some of their questions are similar to ours, but ours focus much more on some of the other factors in terms of teacher satisfaction. So housing, living in rural communities, working with rural parents, views of administration, both within the school and in the district, concerns about the teacher evaluation system that's coming into place, what's happening with retirement systems, and so forth. It's a long survey. We're actually very appreciative of the teachers who took the time to complete it. I have provided you with some highlights. We're buried under data, but that said, we really want to start getting out pieces of the survey as quickly as we can. So this is a first set of highlights, and the sneak preview of, first of all, the rural teachers versus the urban teachers is there is a significant difference. No surprise. But about which issues and how different it is in urban Alaska was surprising to us. So we've got, for example, I think in particular the feelings about families are involved and supportive of the community, which is on page 3. The largest response category is that teachers agree that families are involved and supportive, but if you add together strongly disagree and disagree, you're coming closer to 40% of teachers feel like the community and the families are not supportive of the school. Very different from what you see in the urban districts, where it's more like 80 and 90% are saying that families and community are supportive.
You see those figures again. So 40% in rural, and what was the figure in urban?
And so I'm saying this without the, it's very rough, but probably closer to between 80 and 90% of teachers in the urban schools are feeling supported by families and communities.
Thank you.
And one of our researchers is helping us out with the qualitative, and she came to me and she said, you know, one thing I'm seeing is communities and families are really interested in education that is culturally responsive, that reflects their community, and the school has got a curriculum that is a very Western curriculum, and the teachers are saying they're feeling torn. So once you start looking at that, you know, it's not that necessarily that parents are being nasty or not wanting their kids to do well, but it's that conflict between, is the school reflecting who our community is?
Yes, Representative Lizzo.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out, with respect to some of the subjects, how you would be culturally responsive. I mean, take math, for example. 2 and 2 is 4, whether it's in Aleutic or Chinese or English or whatever.
So what I would, through the chair, what I'd like to respond to the representative that I want to make sure Terry Key has a chance to talk, but there is work being done by Jerry Lipka, who's a UAF professor, under the umbrella Math in a Cultural Context, where he works with Yupik elders to find ways of using Yupik ways of measuring to teach kids math. The idea is that the kids are going to, in the end, be able to take our standardized tests and do just as well as a kid who went through Houghton Mifflin or whoever our everyday math or what we're using now, but that the way they get there is to use these concepts of how elders created the beautiful and geometrically exact borders on the bottoms of cusspucks and things. So it is a way of getting to that same end, but grounding it. Or it's, you know, I use whaling as my example, that the physics of moving a 30-ton beast onto the ground and the chemistry and the biology and the nutrition and all of that, whaling can be a full curriculum, get you to the same end and knowledge of how to use information, but in a culturally responsive way. And I would love to have this conversation some more and hope that we have some time for questions, but I would like to turn it over to my colleague, Terry Akee, with the comment that she's talking about the Alaska State Policy Research Alliance, which is another piece of CAPR's engagement in policy research.
Thank you, Diane, and thank you, committee, for allowing us to come speak to you today. We're very honored to be here. And I have spoken with some of you before about the Regional Educational Laboratory and the work that's happening there, so I'll really quickly, for those of you who aren't familiar, just describe kind of some context around that. The Regional Educational Laboratory System is a federally funded program that provides assistance to states and districts and schools and other stakeholders around using data and research to inform education practice and policy. So what that means is the federal government has reserved quite a big chunk of money to provide free service and free resources to states around different education issues. So we are one of 10 of those regional educational laboratories, and our laboratory serves the Northwest region, which is Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Idaho. So that's what this contract serves. As part of the work in Alaska, we have developed a group of folks coming together to talk about education, and in particularly college and career readiness for Alaska students. And looking at that from a state policy perspective, so not really digging into the classrooms, but really looking at how policymakers can make good policy to help increase the number of students who graduate college career and culturally ready, access for students to go on to those post-secondary opportunities and success exiting out of those post-secondary opportunities into their life's work and whatever it is they're going to be doing. So the Alaska State Policy Research Alliance is a relatively large group of folks, and here you can see the definition of what a research alliance actually is. It's a group of stakeholders who come together around something that they're interested in looking at and getting data and evidence for. So that's a really key part of the REL work, is that it is based on research evidence and data and that sort of thing, and helping people make better decisions about this. And this is our wonderful commissioner. You can see the back of him here, engaged in discussions around what do we think is important for Alaska students around the area of college and career readiness. So there are several goals that the Alliance has, and we have been actually working together for a little over 2 years now. The contract started in January of 2012, so this is our beginning of our third year of work. And the goals are to seek to increase the use of research evidence to make policy decisions. And when we talk about policy, we're talking not just about legislative policy, but policies that state agencies make, that districts make, so sort of policy in that general perspective. We want to provide a forum for policymakers to come together and collaborate and talk with each other about key education issues, and researchers, bringing researchers to the table to have that conversation as well. And then to look at evidence-based solutions. So what do we know about how to best prepare students for, you know, career and technical education, for example, and thinking about what does the research tell us about that. What we would like to see happen, this is a five-year contract, so as I said, we're in the beginning of the third year. What we would like to see happen at the end of this is are some of these outcomes. What we would like to have happen is that the policy makers in Alaska come together with some kind of shared research agenda around the college and career and cultural readiness, specifically that topic area. Understand more about research evidence and how it can be used and how it can be helpful to, for example, to you all in making decisions, these really critical decisions that you're making about education policy for the students. We're working specifically with the state agency around research and capacity and providing data to you all. We're also working with CAPR, for example, their partner, in helping them build capacity to do this kind of policy research. So in terms of the Regional Educational Laboratory or the lab, we're not coming in and doing the work. We're coming in and facilitating the work and providing resources and support for that to happen. So it's not like Terry or Pablo or Ashley, my colleagues are coming in and doing this for the state. We're helping the state develop a process and a model and a way of thinking about this. So who is ASPRA? We sort of like to refer to ASPRA as our herd of cats. We have many, many, many stakeholders. And we've intentionally kept the alliance open to allow folks of all walks and all backgrounds, all areas of expertise to have a contribution to the conversation. So we have, ASPRA's divided into two groups, sort of two ways that we think about it. We have the core group, which are the folks we're trying to influence, so the policymakers, the researchers, state agencies, and in terms of helping them develop the ability to have an evidence-based process for making decisions. So that's kind of our core group. We also have what we call our stakeholder group, which plays a really important role in helping us define what we're focused on, helping the core group sort of map the path of the work. So that's our professional organizations, our superintendents, our Alaska Native groups, the university systems. So we have lots of folks that are involved at that advisory level. And we have approximately, I would say, 4 to 6 events ranging from smaller working groups to larger convenings where we invite everyone every year so that people can be engaged at different levels. The research agenda, this was one of the first things that we did with the group, was to set a research agenda that everyone could agree upon and feel comfortable with following and looking at these issues. And so what you see here are the three questions that emerged from early work with the department and with CAPR, the governor's office, and some of the superintendents about what we thought were most important policy questions to ask and to begin looking at. So we have what the first was, what are the pathways that Alaska students take into post-secondary life? And I'll talk a little bit about a study that we're working on that you'll be seeing results from in the next few months that answers that question. Where do our students go? So, you know, in talking with the Alliance, it was like we have a kind of a good sense kind of anecdotally where they go, but in terms of just really being able to identify the different pathways they take, we don't have that information. The second question is policies, what policies can support successful transition? And the third is a focus on Alaska Native students within this context. Our Alaska Native education partners have been very much involved and really good allies in helping us think about how to include that voice in the policy conversation as well. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of the buckets of work that we do, because I've been talking sort of at a big general abstract level, and it's sort of hard to kind of think about what does that actually mean in terms of some of the work we do. So I'm just going to go through some of the examples of the work that we're doing and then talk a little bit about what's happening now. One of the main areas that we've been working on over the last 2 years is looking at Alaska's data systems. Our state agencies all have data. Our districts all have data. Department of Labor has data. The university has data. And sometimes they don't talk to each other very well, those data sets. And so what we've been working on is inventorying what all the data elements are across the state in all of these different places, and then having conversations about common definitions, common measurement, with the goal of having a statewide system of data that can be used to answer policy questions and research questions. So a lot of what the work that we've been doing over the last couple of years has been working with the different agencies, districts, different groups about what data do you have, what's the quality of it, what kinds of questions can you ask about it, how is it, for example, how is poverty measured for the Department of Labor versus the Department of Education? So looking at making those sure those things are consistent so that when you get information from these various places that it's that they're speaking the same message. So that's been a really important piece of work. We developed a code book that's evolving, and that's and working with ACPE, the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, with their state longitudinal data system. We've been trying to support that work so that that becomes the hub of where information is held. Another large piece of work that we've been doing is working on with a lot of stakeholders about what does it mean to be college, career, and community or culturally ready. We have engaged multiple stakeholder groups in sort of talking about when you think of a child who's successful exiting high school into post-secondary life and then into sort of post educational, what does that look like? And so we've talked to Alaska Native groups. For example, we had a session this fall with the Tanana Chiefs Council with the elders talking about what is important. Talked to elders and youth. We've talked to the department, to superintendents, teachers, community members. And so we're working, we have created a draft definition that the department is now going to take and look at and make sure that it's consistent and that people agree upon it. But it'll serve as kind of the foundation for then some of the data that we collect around college, career, and community cultural readiness that will come back. So if we say, for example, that students who are college ready will,
I'm trying to give the word to the legislators. We do not have time to stop for questions. If we have time between now and 8:40, we will ask questions. But if not, please hold them, and we'll find another opportunity to ask them and answer them.
Right. So
thank you. Yeah. Please continue.
Okay. So that's that work. We will probably be coming back to you next year with a more final work on this area, so that you can see the final definitions and what's happened there. The other big piece of work that's been happening over the last couple of years is this pathways study for Alaska students. And this is really interesting because it involves the Department of Labor, the Department of Ed, the university, and ACPE. And Havila, our lead researcher who's behind me, has been working with them to both merge the data set so that you can actually look at this, because a lot of that data is held in different places, but then to answer these questions. This study is very close to being finished. I anticipate that it will be finished late spring, and those results will be distributed to you all at that point, and with some materials about how to make sense out of the study results. And we're happy to, you know, come back and brief and that kind of thing on that, you know, at any point once that study's finished. Then very quickly, I just wanted to let you know what we're doing right now. We're moving forward with some other pieces of work. We have a smaller group of the Alliance that's working on how do we evaluate state policies. So looking at what policies are out there around education, how can we collect data around them, which ones are amenable to being looked at, and then also having conversations about what are the consequences of evaluating policies, because they're very political. There's lots of things that can, you know, inform the conversation. So understanding that whole context of policy research and evaluation, helping that group do that. One of the things they'll do is determine a policy or two to employ this model that we're developing of doing the research, bringing the data back, making decisions. We're also doing some workshops with researchers and policymakers in the fall about how to use research evidence and data. So the first session is about how do researchers talk to policymakers so that it makes sense to you guys, right? How do they help? How do they ask the kinds of questions that are of interest? Which I think the key there is the language, sharing the language. So the second then is how to communicate results and how to talk about results. We'll continue the work on the definition, and we'll actually start to develop some indicators about what we mean about components of that definition. And then towards the middle of the end of the year, we'll start to create policy briefs around key areas of interest to legislators, to get the governor's office, to state agencies, to other folks. So as I close, I would like to leave you with the thought of thinking about when you're thinking about all of these educational issues in the state, what are some topics that you would like information on? Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of avenues for you to get that information. One is through paper, which Diane has been talking about, but also through the Regional Educational Laboratory, because these are resources that we have available to get some of that information, to provide help and assistance around this. And so I think it's a really good opportunity. So I would like to thank you for allowing us to speak to you, and we are happy to take questions if you have time. If not, we're happy to answer questions later.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hirschberg, Dr. Ackie. Great presentation, and obviously raised more questions that in people's minds. Representative Ledoux.
I actually can't remember it.
Okay. Senator Gardner.
Thank you very much. A couple of slides up. You had the circular chart with all the words. I forget what you call that graph.
The Wordle. The Wordle, yes. That's
okay, the Wordle. So, and you were talking about having met with elders about what they valued and wanted in terms of education. Does this Wordle come from that meeting, or is this a broader?
This is a combined across all of the groups that we talk to, this Wordle. And it evolves over time. As we talk to more and more people, we add to it. We will actually be the definition, the draft definition we can show you, which comes out of this, but is actually in words, you know, like students will do blah, 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 blah.
Thank you. So do you have Wordles for your subsets? I would just be interested in comparing how the elders feel compared to somebody, say, the Anchorage School District.
We could certainly probably break them down by type, I think, as part of the work that we're ongoing work that we're doing. We can look at that, certainly.
Thank you.
What is it to do?
So a couple of questions, if you don't mind. So do you do your own research or hire researchers?
We do our own research. We Education Northwest, which has the Regional Educational Laboratory contract, is a research and support organization, nonprofit, that provides research and evaluation services, but also provides support to districts and states about implementing best practice. So we do our own. We have a shop of about 30 researchers.
So I remember the question I was going to ask. You said it right at the very beginning. You said something, if I heard correctly, about your job is to develop policy, but not really dig around in the classroom. Well, how do you develop policy about the classroom without digging around in the classroom?
That's a very good question through the chair. The Alliance itself, it's a matter of where you're intervening in the system. And we have teachers that have been involved in conversations, superintendents being involved in the conversation, to make sure that the policies that are emerging up at the state level are relevant for the classroom. So the people that we work with directly are more at the systems level, but we have been engaging the stakeholder advisory group, people who are in the classroom. And we've also been engaging the students, so talking to the students about what's important to them. And what needs they have around this. So,
Thank you. I'm really concerned about the data issue and the fact that you've indicated it's not being shared. As we talk about in our area, education, where are we going with education, and maybe even more importantly, how are we going to develop the workforce in Alaska? The whole issue of workforce development. If labor is not communicating with K-12, is not communicating with higher ed, then how on earth are we ever going to know what needs to be done?
So I think that's one of the great success stories of this alliance work that we've been doing, is that there is a lot of sharing going on now. Labor has been wonderful at collaborating with the department and with us and with the university. So what you're seeing, I think, what's emerged out of this work is more trust, better systems. And I would say that, you know, if we were at the end of this project able to have a fully integrated data system for the state, that's a real success. So, but we're making a lot of progress on that. I think when we started, there were silos. People were not as comfortable talking with each other, but we're really seeing that breaking down.
And where does SLEDS fit into this?
This is the state longitudinal data system, which the federal government funds the development of these state systems that brings in data from a variety of sources. And we've been working very closely with Diane Behrens and her group around how to integrate the ASPRA data work with their work so that we're not doing two different things.
And through the chair, if I may add that
We've actually, at the university, always had a very good relationship, especially with the Department of Education working and Department of Labor, for instance, on the teacher supply and demand teacher turnover. The three entities have collaborated so that we could provide you this data. What this work has allowed us to do is do some more digging into where there's both information that we didn't know we had to bring to bear. So, for instance, we were able to spend some time looking at the data on vocational training organizations that are not within the public system and finding out how to get that data integrated. Department of Labor didn't realize that they had the data on military so that we could actually add our youth going into the military as one of the pathways. It's not that we haven't been collaborating, it's that we've had now the resources and the guidance to deepen and make better that collaboration. We now have at the university a new MOA around data sharing with the Department of Education, with the Department of Labor, that, and in collaboration, again, with ACPE, looking at where the Answers database is going, that I think, frankly, we're very excited about the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And alongside this, ICER is developing a database, which you may or may not have heard about, that has started with work with on energy, but is also incorporating a whole bunch of community indicators that, again, can support this work so we can begin to ask not just what's happening with our young people, but then let's look at the communities they're from, and let's look at everything from the cost of fuel to the employment rates in those communities. So it's actually just quite a wonderful collaboration that is underway now.
Right, and evolving.
Thank you very much. Senator Huggins with our last question.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Stevens. Yeah, I appreciate the data that you on your bar chart, and I know a lot of work went into it. But, you know, for me, most of the things are sort of seat of the pants. I think that some of us sitting around this table could come within the shot group of that. But for myself, the two that I was surprised at was housing, and I think it's fair to say that we made a little bit of a deliberate effort to try to help in some of those communities, and hopefully that's reflected here. The other one, though, that was, I guess, the most surprising was Internet. That's a positive statement. But the rest of it, I think we could have marked a bar mm-hmm. chart up and come up within a shot group of what that is. But my question for you is, which is to me is the most important part, it's good to have alignment data, it's good to have data, but ultimately you have to have an action plan for what you do with that data.
Right.
And therein lies my interest. And so I know that's not your responsibility, but therein lies my interest. So I would just, as the people that are trying to simulate this stuff, I would appreciate that.
And through the chair, one of our real interests is how do we better engage with you all in crafting these action plans and providing you with the right information for you to make the choices you need to make. Because, for instance, the CAPR Advisory Board includes the chairs of the House and Senate Education Committees, but there are probably more and better ways that we could engage, and we would love your good thinking on this at another date.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if you have questions, both Diane and I's contacts are on the materials that you've got.
I was not being truthful with you. The very, very last question, Representative Drummond, and we only have a moment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate it. It took me this long just to get a hold of this document from the House Finance Education Budget Subcommittee.
Yes.
The answers, you mentioned the Post-Secondary Education mm-hmm. Commission's answers study. If this study went away, what would that do to the state of your research and data collection? And I see your mouth just dropped open, Diane. I understand mm-hmm. completely. But there is a rumor that there is an attempt to defund this program in that budget subcommittee. So I'm letting you know right now. And I'm really concerned because I was very impressed with the data that they are looking to collect. I have not been able to put all the pieces together yet, but I think this is a valid question in this
And I'm happy, through the chair, I'm happy to find that information. We have a very good federal liaison who is really on top of the federal funding programs, and I can have him check into, I have not heard that rumor that they're going to defund SLEDs, but I can have him check into that more fully, and we can get that information back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the response, please.
I was just going to say, through the chair, we are very eager for this project to be working, and that we all have ideas of where it goes next in terms of building on it. If the SLEDS project were to go away, it would, I think the university would try to pick up some of the pieces and ICER with our work on our other data system, but it would be a huge loss because so much enormous progress had been made in thinking about how do we truly align the K-12 and higher education data so that we know where our students are going and what's happening with them. It's a invaluable resource for us to understand whether our schools are doing what they need to be doing and whether our universities are.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Dr. Hirschberg and Dr. Ackie. Appreciate your time with us. I'm sure we have more things we need to talk about, and we will in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Let's take a brief at ease, and we will ask then Esther Cox to come forward. And so we're at ease for about. Tim Lampkin on staff here just giving me a note that NEA has just emailed us the survey results that were referenced earlier by Representative Gaddis, and it's 187 pages. He's forwarded it to the committee, and after the hearing, you can either view it electronically or print it off at your choice. So, Esther Cox, we're going to ask Ms. Cox to make her presentation with no questions until she's finished, and then we'll have time to ask questions at her request. So, Esther Cox, a pleasure to have you with us. She has been chair of the state board, right?
I have been.
And as our vice chair, so, but pleased to have, very pleased to have you with us, and she's going to be giving us the board's annual report, Ms. Cox.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning, Senators and Representatives. My name is Esther Cox. I am the first Vice Chair of the Alaska State Board of Education and Early Development, and I'm here because basically 3 years ago you passed SB 1 that said there would be an annual report from our board to the Joint Education Committees at, within the first 30 days of the legislative session. Normally, the report is given by the chair of the board, and Jim Mariner is the chair. He also is a very, very busy person. At this particular time in the year, it's testing time. He runs a statewide correspondence program in Anchorage, and he was unable to come. So he sends regrets and apologies, and with that, you get me. Okay?
Lucky us.
Yeah. Thank you. You have a copy of our report. It looks like this. I am certainly not going to read it to you, but I am going to hit some highlights. And,
that's in the second, I'm sorry, you should have a second folder with that in it?
It's not tabbed like mine. It looks like this. I'd like to start with just a brief history of No Child Left Behind, NCLB. There was a school accountability program, as you were well aware, and I'm certainly aware of the terminology, called Adequate Yearly Progress. And in order to make AYP, schools had to be proficient in 31 categories. And if you missed one, you know, schools saw themselves as failing. And as when the law was passed, benchmarks were established, and those benchmarks for proficiency for student achievement in language, arts, and math were raised every other year at first and then every year until the year 2014, this year, and we were to have everyone at 100% proficient. Now, I have never seen, as long as I've been around, 100% anything, and certainly our schools were taking a dismal view at what their job was to do. And I have to tell you that just to make this, you know, bring it closer to home, I was watching Gavel to Gavel the other day, and the House, you were singing Happy Birthday to members of the House. And I watched all the faces, and there were some people who weren't singing. So if you were on an AYP, you would have failed in that one category, and all the good things that you're going to do from here on out for the rest of the legislative session really wouldn't count. So we decided as a state and as a board that we would go for a waiver to this AYP and to NCLB. And, of course, the feds told us what had to be involved in the waiver. First of all, you had to increase the rigor of your language arts and math standards. Number two, you had to tie educator evaluation to student growth. Number three, we had to implement a system of accountability for schools. And number four, we had to have rigorous assessments. So let's start with standards. Senator Stevens had a two-day hearing in Anchorage in January, and I think probably he heard overwhelming support for our new state standards. And I will say that the support comes because we started writing our standards in about 2010, and it became a statewide conversation. We had university, business people, teachers, administrators, people involved, content area people who had the input and were helping write the standards. And so, and you say, well, why would you have the university involved? Excuse me. Because, as you well know, we've had some issues regarding students matriculating from our high schools into college or university, and some having to take additional remediation courses, and you know they have to pay for them and they don't get any credit for those courses. And so we wanted the university involved so that when we completed the writing of our standards, they would say, if students meet these standards, they will be successful at the university. So we had all these folks involved. At any rate, now we have Alaska State Academic Standards. Now, in 2012, we passed a regulation that said districts must provide a teacher evaluation system that ties the ratings to student growth. So we listened very, very closely to a lot of testimony regarding this regulation, as you can well imagine, and we are implementing this a little more slowly than what we'd anticipated at the get-go. So in 2016, 20% of a teacher's rating will be based on student growth. 2017, 20%. 2018, 35%. And by 2019, we will be at 50%. The department now is geared up and helping districts take a look at their teacher evaluation systems and get ready for this new twist. Then also we had to implement a system of accountability, and we have put together the Alaska School Growth and Proficiency Index, 1 to 5 star schools. And there's an excellent paragraph on page 9 of your packet on the Growth Proficiency Index. I'm not going to go over that, but I will just highlight briefly some of the measures that we use. Student growth in reading, writing, and math. Attendance. High school. The work ready and college entrance assessments, the high school graduation rate, and also school districts must reduce the percent of non-proficient students by 50% in 6 years. And this will meet the specifics set out by the USDOE, which you will find on pages 3 and 4 of your packet. What's great about the new system, the 5-star system, is it's not punitive. It's an incentive. And let me give you an example. Mount Edgecombe, everybody knows Mount Edgecombe, our state boarding school down in Sitka. Randy Hawk is the superintendent there. And after he got his ratings, they were a 4-star school. And Randy said, my students deserve to attend a 5-star school. And you can bet when Randy got his ratings, he went back and he had a very robust conversation with his faculty and said, where do we need to beef up? What do we need to do for our student achievement? Because our kids are going to go to a 5-star school. I put money on the table right now. When the ratings come out next August, Mount Edgecombe will be a 5-star school. Early literacy. Early literacy, you know that's a topic talked about all over the state. You, as educators, have been talking about it. Every once in a while, a program really sparkles. Of course, you know, the State Department is a partner with Best Beginnings, and they sponsor a program called Imagination Library. If you're not aware of it, it's a wonderful program because people just simply have to register their children, and they cover children until they're 5, and that child receives a free book every month. And the two things that we know for sure about early literacy is, one, there must be reading materials in the home, and number two, children need to be read to. So I think they're doing a fine job. The Alaska Performance Scholarship, I'm sure if you haven't had the report, you will get a full report with all the statistics from Diane Barron, so I'm not going to go into that. I just want you to know that, finally, I do believe that the channel of communication is wide open. I have a grandson who's graduating from high school. Just about every year I've had him, I'm running out, and the Anchorage School District is going to be in dire straits when I get through all my grandkids. But he's graduating this year from high school, and I said, Garrett, tell me, what are you doing, and how are you getting money to go to college? Oh, Nan, I've got it taken care of. I've gone over my transcripts with my counselor. I'm taking the ACT. He's going to the university in Anchorage. And he's got it all laid out. He's delighted. And, of course, luckily for my family, he's also had the Scholars Program, and he's going to be just fine. But I take the opportunity to talk to high school kids every opportunity I have and bring up the scholarship to see if they know about it. And the one thing that you need to hear, I think, is that I've never heard one complaint that the money has to be spent in the state of Alaska. They are delighted for the scholarships. So in the vernacular, I just like to say to all of you, you've done good. Okay. Teacher quality. It is the job of our board to approve teacher preparation programs that are presented to us from the university system. UAS, as far as I'm concerned, is on the leading edge. When they see a need, they provide that the coursework for teachers to be certified. For example, we approved an endorsement in distance delivery and e-learning for certificated teachers. You know, that we talk about distance delivery, but that's a different set of strategies and a different set of pedagogies that are needed for teaching. And so UAS saw that need. They are they're providing that kind of professional growth for teachers. We also, for UAS, approved an advanced endorsement in K-8 elementary. UAA, approved an advanced endorsement for elementary teachers, 18 credits in teaching English language learners. Again, a different set of strategies that are needed. And then, you know, when you hang around as long as I do, you see the circle really come around. And I would guess that most of the old-time teachers that are in this room were graduates of a four-year baccalaureate program. And at the end of that time, you were able to go for certification in the state in which you got your baccalaureate degree. Well, several years ago, the university system says, no, we need to have 4 years in a content area, and then we're going to add a year and a half or 2 years for the master's degree in teaching. So really and truly, we couldn't get teachers in the classroom for about 6 years. Well, UAF has come along, and we approved this program, a four-year baccalaureate program. Students have two majors. They have a content major and a major in education, and when they graduate, they are ready to, after 4 years, they are ready to apply for certification. We also, let me talk a little bit about residential programs. We passed the regs that align residential programs with state law, and the law, of course, had to do with variable program lengths. I commend you for that. We did meet up in Nome, had a chance to go through NACTEC up there. It's a great opportunity for youngsters to come in from rural Alaska, spend a couple of weeks at NACTEC, be exposed, and have an opportunity for areas, growth areas that you just can't possibly replicate out in rural schools. And the state now picks up their residential. Okay. Kinder screening. We had passed a reg to screen kindergartners, first and second, and certain third graders trying to pick up on early literacy skills and ID those kids with delays. Now, there's quite a bit of information on that in your packet. The kinds of assessments that teachers are going to use hopefully will not be onerous. They will be quick and dirty, so they get an idea and keep track of how our youngsters are doing. 70-30. Years past, you've had a resolution from our board that says, we don't need 70-30 anymore. Just recently, you've got a resolution from our board that says, we've changed our mind. We need to keep 70-30. And what we found with 70-30 is that we could identify schools that really needed some additional assistance and, to bring up student achievement. And
would you just take a moment to explain 70-30 so everyone in the audience, I think, I suspect everyone knows, but just very, very briefly.
Okay, 70-30 is a law that says 70% of the state money must be spent in the classroom. 30% can go for heat, water, whatever else, okay? And if that's not possible, then a waiver process is available, and schools do apply to our board for a waiver. Excuse me, I think this past year we did 22 or 24 waivers. I have to tell you that most of the time the waivers are 68%, 69%, and they get down lower to the upper 50%, then we do some checking. You've heard this story many, many times. It's insurance, it's energy costs that are really throwing things out of whack. Charter schools, my board approves or rejects renewals and initials proposals. To my knowledge, we've never rejected a charter school application because that charter school has been approved by the local board first. We have asked for additional information before we have made that approval. But we just approved that this year Nome's Anvil City Science Center, Anchorage Frontier Charter Renewal, Kenai's initial charter for the Great Land Academy, and I'm telling you, I hope that school gets off the ground because I'm going to go back. It sounded absolutely great. And Anchorage Highland Tech, also a renewal. Then we have, remember, the four things I told you. One thing had to be a state system of support and lovingly called SSOS. Educators love acronyms. We ID schools that need assistance and then move to try to give that assistance to them. Page 11 and 12 breaks down the process for you. Briefly, we have 12 SSOS coaches in 13 schools. The school's leader and coach create a plan and of service with specific goals and actions and with designated responses. And so you have people shoring up and helping the whole community. You know, the bottom line is we want our students everywhere to achieve, and how can we assist that to happen? On page 13 and 14, you will find quite a bit of information on the Alaska Learning Network, which we call ACLIN. Our fall enrollment this year was 283 students, and the coursework meets the APS criteria. Some has dual credit, for which I have one word to say, and that's hallelujah. The UAA and ACLIN put together, I'm just going to give you one example of the class, a statewide mining class. And upon completion, the students could apply for paid internship. It gave dual credit, 3 university credits, 1 semester of high school credit, and the best part is several of the mining companies helped to fund the course. Now the department has contracted with UAS and they are operating the program, and it certainly goes hand in hand with the teacher certification program that I just talked to you about teaching teachers how to teach online. Okay. Teacher mentoring is on page 14 of your packet, and it's one of my favorite programs to ever talk with you about because it works.
Actually, page 15.
Is it page 15?
Yeah.
Well, okay, thank you. Our retention has moved from 67% to 72% and to 85%. The state funds mentors in rural Alaska, and we do have a federal grant that funds some mentors in urban Alaska. You know, we all understand that there's a very big change for teachers, particularly coming from outside, who move into rural Alaska. But, you know, there's still some real big changes, even for some people who move into our state and teach in our urban centers. And so the mentors are needed there also. It certainly is something that is needed in rural Alaska. And it's a great program. Okay. Mount Edgecombe, many of you may know that my board is the official school board for Mount Edgecombe. They do have a citizens advisory board, but the Alaska State Board of Education is the board of ed for Mount Edgecombe. Mount Edgecombe is a wildly successful school. Told you that they were a four-star school, and next year I look for them to be a five-star school. They have a graduation rate of 97%. They have an attendance rate of 96%. There's something to be said for boarding schools. There's a lot of information in your packet on pages 17 and 18 on the Alaska Council on the Arts. I'm not going to say much about that, only that there's a lot going on, of course, artists in the schools program. Also, giving professional growth to teachers on how to use art when you're teaching the basic content areas. So it doesn't have to be just over in the corner. I'm going to the art class now. Libraries, archives, and museums, that's on page 19 and 20. The SLAM building, my understanding is that the vault opens on the 1st of March, and then the old museum will be turned down. And I think, depending on funding, the grand opening is slated for April 2016. Linda Thibodeau comes and gives a report to the board every meeting, and it is great that this is moving in the direction that it's going. It certainly is needed. If you don't believe that, take a walk over and go to where the archives are held in that building and see what's holding that building together. It's just... it'll make you sweat. Student data. In 2000, and that's on page 21 of your packet. In 2010, the computation of the graduation rate changed. The Fed said, you know, we have 50 states and 50 ways to figure graduation rate. And so they got everybody on the same plate. Our graduation rate, what's really important, is continuing to creep up. In 2013, the four-year graduation rate was 71.7. The five-year graduation rate was 74.6. It's becoming more and more, or I should say less and less, uncommon for students to stay 5 years in high school for a variety of reasons that you well know. Lots of contingencies in kids' lives these days that you and I didn't experience. We're shooting for an 90% graduation rate by 2020. So, wish us luck. Now, everybody, don't put the two together, because graduation rate is figured over a four-year span, and dropout rate is figured yearly, annually. And our dropout rate in 2004 and 5 was 6%. In 2013 was 4%. So we see graduation rate inching up and thankfully dropout rate inching downward. Okay. HSGQE, the High School Graduating Qualifying Exam. All right, you do have a resolution in front of you or nearby from our board that said the time has come. I hate to say this, we all outlive our usefulness, and this particular exam certainly has just been reduced to a test of basic skills. The governor has proposed a choice for students that the state will pay for, SAT, ACT, or work keys, which sounds like a great thing. But most important is our new assessments are going to be matched to our new standards, and they are going to measure academic competency and growth. So the need for a high-stakes test is truly not there anymore. So you do have a resolution from our board, and hopefully you'll take that into mind when you're debating that question. And finally, in my tenure on the board, I have not seen a time when we're getting three new board members, and this is it. In March, we have three new members who have been appointed: Kathleen Yar from Ketchikan, Kenneth Gallahorn from Kotzebue, and here's a name that you are all very familiar with: Barbara Thompson from Juneau. So, with that, There's highlights on this packet, and I hope I didn't take all the time.
No,
I
just...
Entertain questions on anything the board has discussed or taken.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. This is perfect. Appreciate your report. Very good to see you again. We do have some 20 minutes, so we'll go to questions. I believe the first one would be Representative Reinbold.
Okay.
And then Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Okay, so I've got several questions, so you can allow me, to take turn or as you see fit. But we have been studying funding very seriously, and if you include PERS and TERS, people transportation, construction, debt reimbursement, the BSA, we're spending nearly $3 billion a year of funding that we know on K through 12 education. And if you go to page 24, even according to the NEA rankings, we spend the most per capita. And if you go on page 24 and you look at the NAEP scores for math, it states that we're significantly lower than 40 states. We're in the bottom tier. We're in the bottom third of eighth grade math. And reading, we're lower than 46 states. I just would like you to justify why are we in so low with such high funding.
Quite frankly, through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I can't justify anything. I think that, I think the beefing up of our standards, I think that having some new assessments and trying very hard, I explained to you just briefly about early literacy and earlier testing with children in K, through third grade, with the idea of really trying to have children reading at grade level by the time they're in third grade. The upside is that by the time we get to eighth grade, our scores are really going up. So.
Okay, because I hope, like Senator Huggins said, we need an action plan in regards to this, because there's a lot of people that are very concerned that we're spending nearly $3 billion and not achieving the outcomes that we should, in this state. So there's definitely alarm in regards to that. Second, you said that you had overwhelming support at the January hearing. However, there was a lot of opponents there as well, including Sandra Stotsky, that was one of the validating committee members, and she brought some extremely
And you're talking about the Alaska State Standards.
Right, the Alaska State Standards and the Common Core. And I've actually have an informal advisory panel that's looking into some of the concerns and issues. And I'm getting a lot of input from teachers right now. And one thing that they would like that I just recently got yesterday is the Danielson model. Can you explain the Danielson model, where that came from and why that's being implemented in our schools?
Charlotte Danielson and Marzano. My understanding and is that I think Kenai is using Charlotte Danielson, and this is these are teacher evaluation processes to use. I can't give you much of an answer, Representative, because I have not personally been involved and used those models. I'm not a principal anymore, but districts have that opportunity to take a look at how they are going to approach teacher evaluation and how they are going to incorporate the new regs, which is tying it to student growth. And the Danielson model, I have seen the book, and it certainly has it has rubrics all the way through. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I know that districts have that opportunity to take a look at what canned evaluation systems or develop their own.
Thank you. Would you mind holding, and we'll come back to you. We need to give other people a chance, so Representative Drummond and then Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Esther, it's delightful to see you again.
It's nice to see you.
Back to the five-star rating, mm-hmm. I was a little concerned when I heard you say that you fully expect to see Mount Edgecombe with five stars next year. But if I'm doing the math right, it means some other school is going to have to fall out of the five-star category because the school must be, as the highest performing school, the school must be in the top 10% of schools. So that tells me if we have 10% of our schools, say 50 schools, and Mount Edgecombe moves into that category, somebody else, some other school is going to have to drop out of that in order for Mount Edgecombe to get its 5 stars. It almost sounds again like we can't all be at 100% like AYP expected us to do. But just it's just a thought of how the ranking system is going to stratify schools, and if schools do want to move into the 5-star ranking, is it possible for all the schools that are performing at that high level to be 5-star schools because of the limitations of the top 10%?
Through the chair, you've got me there.
Ms. Kassi, if you don't mind, I think the commissioner might have an answer if you wouldn't mind him coming up.
I'd love it.
this is called a lifeline, right? Thank you.
I was nodding and saying thank you for the record. Mike Hanley, the commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And that's a good point you make, but there is a separation. There's a rubric and a scoring system for becoming a 1 through 5-star school. Every school has the opportunity to become a 5-star school. Separately, we recognize the top 10% as high-performing schools, and we reward them. We recognize the lowest schools so that we can help support them. But that's separate than their actual 1 through 5 stars.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I appreciate it. I was actually delighted that my local, my neighborhood school, North Star Elementary in Anchorage, came out as a 4-star school when the ranking was instituted. And that's a Title I school. It has traditionally failed in so many of those areas because of the lack of ability for AYP to work well for schools like that. But I was delighted that they came out that way because they have been working very hard and they are achieving success in their school. And one question, I didn't see anywhere in your report, I haven't had a chance to read it, of course, yet, where early childhood education is addressed by the state board. Did you have any conversations at all about the impact of more early childhood, high-quality early childhood programs helping kids with achieve literacy?
Through the chair. Representative Drummond, we've had lots of conversations about early childhood programs, and in fact had a pilot going in rural Alaska, and I think in a couple of Anchorage schools too. I can't remember the green one's name on Tudor. They were part of that.
Willowcrest, yes.
Thank you. Okay. And I think that program now is, it's no longer on pilot. It is still going. It becomes a matter of funding, frankly, you know, to get. And the other thing is that no one wants to mandate an early childhood program, but we certainly have discussed the benefits of having children ready to learn when they go to school.
But you haven't made any suggestions in terms of expanding the availability of early childhood on a voluntary basis, of course.
Not at this stage.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Ledoux.
I was just wondering how the dropout statistics figured in the graduation rate. So if you start out with a class, let's say in ninth grade, of 100 students, and then 50 of them drop out, and then the others progress through the 12th grade. How are the 50 that drop? I mean, do you just determine then that the graduation rate for that school, because 50 dropped out before 12th grade, is 50%, even if all the remaining 50 graduated?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you know, I have to tell you that the statistical stuff I leave to the big fellow over there in the department by the name of Eric McCormick, who keeps us informed. I would butcher it, I think, if I tried to play with the statistics. I don't know.
And I don't see the lifeline nodding.
Chair Stevens, I can surely step up and answer any of these, or you can focus on the board's report, but I can surely step in and help with you as you
see. Should we like that at this time?
I actually would, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Again, to the chair, my name is Mike Hanley, the commissioner for the Department of Education. The four-year graduation rate is a formula based on it's 4 years. So you count the number of students, as you said, the 100 students that come in ninth grade, how many of those graduate in 12th grade? That's basically the formula. There's some other things. If a student moves away and they go to a different school, that doesn't count against you and those kinds of things. But basically, how many of the ninth graders ended up graduating 4 years later? That's where we get our graduation rate. That's where we get our 71.7%. Dropout rate is done, it's measured totally separately. It's an annual description. So when we lose a student from a school system and they are no longer attending and they are no longer attending any school, they're considered dropouts. And so that happens on an annual basis. So you heard that now our latest dropout rate is 4% for the last year. So you could probably, let's say it was 4% for the last 4 years. You take 4%, 4%, 4%, you know, so that'd be 16%. Then you've got a graduation rate of 71.7, and you've got a dropout rate over the course of 4 years. It's about 16, let's say. That still leaves a small number of students in there that are unaccounted for. Those would be students that are graduating in the fifth year or received a certificate of achievement instead of a diploma. So that's basically how they're all accounted.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
One question on, you talked about acronyms. We all love acronyms, and I have heard three acronyms so far for the Alaska Standards. What is it? What is the acronym? What is the actual name of our new standards?
The Alaska State.
You mentioned Alaska State Academic Standards. Is that really it? I mean, are we all going to be talking
State
about
academic standards?
Alaska State Academic Standards, ASAS. Is that it? I've heard ASS. I've heard AAS.
Do you refer to them as the Alaska Academic Standards or the Alaska State Academic Standards?
Yeah.
I'd like to see one that we can all
find one and hang on to it, right?
Yeah, we like standards. I really like acronyms that don't change. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The state board has a policy that all students will take WorkKeys in 11th grade and then can take it in 12th grade as well. Provides that reading for information, applied mathematics, and locating information. Then that goes on the transcripts at what level. Has the school board backed away from that for all students, or is that still the policy of the school board that all students should take?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it is still the policy of the board. Every student, every 11th grade student takes the work keys.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Reinbold.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Stevens. Okay, my question is back to the Danielson model. So the Danielson model, it's the implementation of that is in regards to, is that the reason it's being implemented, is it linked to the waiver and Common Core standards implementation?
Through the chair, the Danielson model is a teacher evaluation model that Charlotte Danielson came up with. It is able to be, I suppose, accepted in totality or modified if a district chooses to use that model in teacher evaluation. If a district were to choose that model in evaluation, it would certainly have to be modified to meet what standards are Alaska standards, if I'm hearing your question correctly. So. It's very difficult. If somebody devises an evaluation system that you don't mess with it so it fits what needs you have in your district.
Mm-hmm. As a follow-up, so the teachers are just asking me, it's linked to the Common Core standards. Is it the implementation behind the Danielson model, it's because of the waiver and the teacher evaluation system and the reason we got the waiver? And is that a correct
Through the chair, the one district that I know that is using the Danielson model started and has been implementing that model before we even went for the waiver.
Okay. And as a follow-up, the Anchorage School District is implementing that model as well. So, yes, I've gotten three emails just within the past week in regards to the Danielson model, and I just want to know why, you know, what is the impetus behind, you know, this specific model, but maybe I'm asking the wrong person. So I'm going to move on to the next question. Is on page 23, it says only one-fifth of our eighth-grade students are being tested for science, just a very small portion for national outcomes. Why?
Through the chair, a small portion.
In
two
different
places.
I know
science testing has just come on. We've been doing language arts and math. I don't know the percentage of the students that are being tested.
Well, on page 23, it says a science test is given to a small sample of eighth graders, including about one-fifth of Alaska's eighth graders. No test was given in 2013.
Then maybe you could get back to us on that if you wouldn't mind.
Sure, I can ask Eric.
Certainly.
I'm not positive. I would waller in supposition. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Seaton, any other questions? Well, this has been fascinating. I really appreciate your being with us, as always. You mentioned the House sang happy birthday. I just want you to notice the Senate never sings happy birthday. We know that we'd all fail. But appreciate your being here, and all of you as well. Thanks so much, and we're adjourned.
Thank you very much.